WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Everywhere you turn these days, you hear stories about wage cuts and benefit losses. But one sector of society seems to be fairly well insulated from the crunch. They're the CEOs of America's largest corporations. For 20 years, Grave Crystal worked as a compensation consultant to these CEOs, winning them bigger and bigger wage and benefit packages. Fortune magazine called him America's foremost authority on executive compensation. But a few years ago, Crystal realized these executive packages were spinning out of control, and he switched sides. He's just written a book called In Search of Excess, The Overcompensation of American Executives. He also edits a newsletter, The Crystal Report, and is a columnist for Financial World magazine. Terry Gross spoke with him earlier this week.
You have compared CEOs to pharaohs. Let me ask you to make the comparison.
To pharaohs? Certainly in the sense that they are paid a huge amount, as I assume the pharaohs were, that there are huge differentials between the pay of the pharaoh and the pay of his citizenry, the pay of a CEO and the pay of his workers, I should say. And in addition, I think when I made the comparison to pharaohs, I think of the sense of growing isolation of American CEOs of modern corporations. They no longer eat in the corporate cafeteria. They have private dining rooms. I even remember a CEO who went so far as to lure a French chef away from a major Manhattan restaurant and had to give him a 12,000 share stock option to do so, just so he could cook for this one person. So they come to work by limousine. The elevators are cleared out of the hoi polloi, or the hoi polloi, I should say, are cleared out of the elevators, so that the CEO can ride up in solitary splendor. He's served by white-coated waiters all day long. He really meets no one except people on his same level and a few receptionists, a few secretaries, an elevator starter, and a chauffeur.
Maybe you can describe a CEO package that you think exemplifies what has gone wrong with the way we compensate CEOs.
I'm trying to think of a single package. Well, one example, and I don't mean to single him out, would be Rand Ariscog. Now, he's actually changing his behavior, so maybe it is a good example. In his case, here's a person, and I'm doing this by memory, but here's a person whose cash compensation...
Let me interrupt you.
Yeah.
He's the head of ITT.
The head of ITT. His cash compensation for 1990, I think, was on the order of $2.5-3 million in that area, and I have to be a little imprecise because I don't have my notes in front of me. He received about $4 million worth of free shares. Now, I don't mean by this option shares where the price has to go up for you to get a reward. He got the shares totally free, so even if the price dropped in half, he would still make $2 million. And he received some payouts under some so-called performance unit plans, supposedly based on the company's magnificent performance. Those were another few million. The total package, I do remember that number, came out to be $11.5 million for a single year's work. And the problem here are two problems. One is that it's an awesome size. And secondly, the company's performance has been rather poor. A company way down in the rankings by almost any measure. Maybe 70-75% of companies doing better than this company. On other measures, maybe 80% of companies doing better. So here you have a package that was very high, obviously not responsive to performance, or he wouldn't have received this sort of money. Now, he was the subject, and ITT was the subject of withering criticism by me, by others, even by the major institutional investors, the California Public Employees Retirement System, which is the largest body of private capital in the United States, voted its million-plus shares against the re-election of the board to show its displeasure. And to his credit and to the credit of the board, the company is now moving to inject a considerably greater degree of risk into his pay package. Whether it's going to be smaller or not, we're told it may be, but I haven't seen the numbers yet.
What do you say to CEOs when they say, well, how come you make so much? And they say, well, what's the big deal? Sports celebrities, Hollywood celebrities, they make more than we do.
Some years ago, a chief economist of the SEC, Ken Lane, who's now gone back to academia, wrote a doctoral dissertation, And in it, he tried to account for why one baseball player makes more than another. And he found that the baseball market is actually a pretty rational market. He found that he could account for 74% of the variation in baseball players' pay if he knew such things as their batting averages, or if they were pitchers, whether they won the Cy Young Award or had an ERA that was very outstanding and things like that. So here was a market where 74% of the pay of the players was being driven by performance. And now I look at a study I just finished of 1,000 CEOs, and I find that at best, you know, the best thing I can find is to account for about 4.5% of the variation in pay based on performance. In other words, about 95% is unexplainable on the basis of performance. This is a market that is totally crazy. It is not rational. We pay huge amounts of money, and we aren't paying it for performance. And that's why people are very angry in a recession, because their pay is going down, and they look upstairs, and they see Mr. Big, and his pay is not going down. It's probably even going up, maybe not a lot, but the point is it should be going down a great deal. This person is negotiating for himself. That's nothing wrong with that, but he's negotiating against his friends, so to speak, on the board. The boards aren't negotiating with any vigor, and so the CEO gets a huge amount of money, and what's missing here is that the relationship between pay and performance is gone.
I'm interested in hearing your critique of what's wrong with big compensation packages, I mean huge compensation packages for CEOs. One of the things that you say is that it's making us less competitive. CEOs always talk about how we need to be more competitive, but compare the American CEO with their foreign counterparts.
Yeah, and that's a very important argument these days when we have... you know, we're engaged in such a tremendous battle with the Japanese and the Germans, just to name two countries. A CEO in Japan, for example, makes around 16, 17 times. I mentioned in my book, I think 16, 17 times. Interestingly, someone got mad when they read that, and they did a study, and they claim that the number is 25 times, and I'm wrong. But even if it were 25 times, let's just grant that it is 25 times. In Germany, in France, it's also about 25 times. England, maybe 32, 33 times. So here we have people earning 25, 35 times the pay of a worker. We come to the United States, and depending on what database you want to use, the lowest number you could probably find is 100 times the pay of a worker. I have some data that if you take big company CEOs, can get it up to 150 times the pay of a worker just for your average CEO. And now I know people will often say, and CEOs will defend themselves, and they'll say, well, you know, listen, I could double my salary and it would get lost in the rounding. First of all, the statement's an utter falsity, because if you're making 6 or 7 million, or you're Rand Ariscog and you're making 11 million, if you double his salary, it doesn't get lost in the rounding, even of IBM's earnings, which are far larger than ITT's. The second thing is it has this huge suck-up effect. I just finished a study on the plane last night when I was coming in, and I found statistically that if you give the CEO a $1,000 raise, you give the chief operating officer, the number two person, statistically a $400 raise. You give the chief financial officer a $250 raise, and you give the chief legal officer a $150 raise. So already, we're just talking about three more people in the organization. Already, the $1,000 raise has turned into an $1,800 cost to the shareholders, and that's just for four people. We still have hundreds more to go. I don't mean to suggest that we're all going to get an extra $150,000. The effect's going to reduce rapidly. But still, maybe that $1,000 raise, by the time it cascades through the entire corporation, may cost $30,000, $40,000. And now we're talking about big bucks. And, you know, you say, well, if we're going to pay, if we're going to have hugely more costs for management, and that's what we're talking about here, if we're going to have hugely more costs for management, if we have productivity in return for it, performance, then that wouldn't be so bad. But, of course, I've already said to you that we can only account for 5% of the difference in pay on the basis of performance, so that isn't working right. We just have extra cost. In fact, studies I've done tend to show very conclusively that if you have very high costs, you have less performance, not more performance, less performance, because these are, after all, costs. And so then you say to yourself, well, if you're going to have much higher costs than the Japanese have for this particular component of labor, and much higher, no extra benefits, then one of two things has got to happen mathematically. You either have to have less profits, you give your shareholders less, and that probably is the least likely explanation. The more likely one is the other explanation, which is you raise your prices. You raise your prices, and then what do? You lose market share, and then you start wondering why we're not competitive with the Japanese and the Germans. I don't mean to suggest that if we cut our pay of the top executive group that everything would be fine tomorrow. But, you know, we got to start somewhere. I find it sort of interesting that back in the early 80s, Lee Iacocca and others got up and exhorted the United Auto Workers to pull in their belt, and they said, look, we're dying from the Japanese. Why, their labor costs are much lower than ours. We've got to cinch up our belts. We've got to cut the pay of the rank-and-file auto workers, and indeed, the pay was cut. Now, you know, Mr. Iacocca needs to give the same speech in a huge auditorium, except this time all the people in the audience are not going to be the United Auto Workers. They're going to be his fellow CEOs.
If the high benefits and high compensation packages for CEOs don't parallel terrific performance, why are they getting that much? Why are their companies willing to pay them that much?
Well, partly it's an illusion that, in effect, what's happened, and I knew how this worked very much as a compensation consultant, the process seems to be rational in the sense that, I mean, think of it. Let's suppose that you were going to go out and try to hire a secretary. So presumably you would identify certain companies and you would try to find out what they pay their secretary. So you would have a sense of the market, what the pay levels were, and then you would advertise and you would hire your secretary. in the case of CEOs, the process is just the same. Companies identify other companies to compare to. For example, when I was a consultant to the H.J. Heinz company, the big food company, every other year, we would take some 25 companies. We'd look at, and the companies you'd think of. We'd look at Quaker Oats and Kellogg and General Mills and Ralston Purina and Philip Morris, companies like that, and Procter & Gamble. And we'd put them into a database, and we'd find out what the CEOs earned, for example. And we'd say, okay, here's the market. First of all, we made a presumption that there is a market here, which I wonder whether that's a correct presumption now. But we said, here's the market. Here's the average pay. Here's what the higher ones pay. Here's what the lower ones pay. Now, right away, we get into a problem here because most companies say to themselves, or most boards, they say, well, you know, we are not a bunch of pikers, especially not with the CEO, maybe with the workers, but not with the CEO. We're not pikers. Why, we're not going to pay less than the average. I mean, that would be an insult. We must pay the CEO at least the average. And in fact, I remember doing a study some years ago of 100 major companies, and I asked them the question. I said, if you had a set of data where you have people paid from X to Y and the average is in the middle somewhere, where would you want to position your CEO? And they said one-third of them said they wanted to pay above the average, about 15 to 20% above the average, because they thought that would help attract a better breed of manager. And the other two-thirds said they wanted to pay exactly at the average. And not one of them said they wanted to pay below the average. And if you think about that mathematically, if every year two-thirds of the companies are bound to pay, you know, want to go up to the average if they're below it, they don't come down to it if they're above, one-third want to be above it, you're never going to catch the numbers. They're just every year, they get bigger and bigger. And every year people look at the survey and say, oh my God, we're behind again. You know, we're going to have to give the poor bloke another raise. What they don't do are two other things. They don't, as I said in the book, you know, they don't look across the waters to what CEOs earn elsewhere. It never dawns on them to say, well, what do, you know, if I'm the head of Chrysler, what do they pay that guy who runs Toyota? What do they pay that guy who runs Honda? What do they pay that guy who runs Volkswagen? And so I never look across the waters. And the other thing I do is I don't look down. I don't say, you know, what's happening to my pay versus the pay of the worker? People say, who cares? You know, let's just look at these 25 CEOs and it looks like we got to give another raise. And meanwhile, the whole thing spirals out of control.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Grave Crystal, and he's a former compensation consultant. He used to consult on how much CEOs should get. Now he's a kind of critic of that process. He's a financial journalist and author of the new book, In Search of Excess, The Overcompensation of American Executives. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. We're talking about why CEOs make so much money, and my guest is Grave Crystal, who's the author of the new book, In Search of Excess. Now, you've basically changed sides. You used to be a compensation consultant.
Yes.
You used to consult for corporations on what kind of compensation package and salary and so on should go to a CEO. Now you're consulting with stockholders, with institutional investors and pension funds, and you're trying to hold down the size of these CEO packages. Why did you decide to switch sides? What changed for you?
Well, first of all, let me just make a point of clarification. I don't do very much consulting of any sort. Probably, if I added it up, less than 10% of my income, which is greatly reduced from the days when I was a consultant, comes from any sort of consulting activities. Fundamentally, I'm a writer. So I'm not out actively, necessarily lobbying against companies to get their pay down for money. I'm basically writing as a critic of executive compensation. But when you ask me why I have changed, I think the reason is that as I had been in this field for so many years, it began to dawn on me slowly, because when you're a consultant, you work with one company at a time. You're not being paid to rise in a helicopter 1,000 feet above the scene of the battle and do a lot of analyses, because nobody's going to pay for the helicopter ride. But it began to dawn on me just sort of slowly that somehow this thing wasn't working right, that the system was not fair. And what offended me the most were companies that you would encounter, and I would hear from colleagues all the time about companies where if anything went wrong, they call up and they say, there's something wrong with my compensation plan. And you'd say, well, what's that? And they say, well, it's not paying off. And you'd say, well, pardon me, but maybe that's the proof that this plan is working, that it's equating non-performance with non-reward. And so then they just get another consultant. So you began to get the idea that pay was just going out of control, getting higher and higher. We were adding plans on top of plans. Nobody was willing, with John Reed and a few other people as exceptions, hardly anybody was willing to cut their pay in hard times. So I began to feel that there's something intellectually dishonest about this whole process. And that sort of impelled me out into academia and into being a critic.
What suggestions would you make for reforming the system?
Well, the first thing is, I think it's important to say what I wouldn't suggest. I wouldn't suggest getting in and having the government jump in and have some ham-handed attempts to control executive pay, like, for example, freezing it or saying you can't make more than the President of the United States, or putting back a huge tax or something like that. I don't think any of those are probably going to be all that useful, and they could be very distorting to the markets. I mean, my own view of the world is to some relatively small suggestions, but I think they would help over time. I think the first thing that would be important is to improve the bargaining process between the CEO, who is selling his services, and between the board of directors, who are the people buying the services. The boards of directors need to be jump-started into action. These are not the owners of the company. They're the representatives of the owners. Most of them own like 5 shares or 100 shares or whatever. Their pay insulates them from the company's fortune. And the boards of directors, who are often the friends of the CEO, are not pushing back. They are not saying, hey, wait a minute. If you want to earn $5 million, I mean, gee, that's a lot of money. I'll tell you what, Bill, give us a couple of months to think about it. And to be honest with you, Bill, during those couple of months, we're going to call a search firm and see if we can find someone who's as good as you to do the job for $2 million. And if we were to do that, maybe we'd find that people would be able to take those jobs. I would mention to you parenthetically that if we threw open the bidding for the CEO's job in a truly competitive bidding process with honest people doing the evaluation, I could guarantee you that pay would fall tremendously. And the reason I can guarantee it to you is that there are so many talented women and talented minorities who have been kept out of the bidding process that if we open it to them, the economics would suggest the rate would have to fall tremendously. So I'm suggesting that, first of all, we need to have the boards push back. One of the things that I think very simply a board could do is to have its own compensation consultant. This field is very tricky. If you had a compensation consultant who worked for the board is his client or her client, that compensation consultant has no ties whatsoever with the company. I mean, it will not do for me to be the compensation consultant to the board and for my partner in my firm to be the actuary to the company, because right away we're in a conflict of interest. To have no ties, and incidentally, and when I make this recommendation, I'm not trying to set up an annuity for myself. I am not interested in doing that sort of work. I really want to write. But where you'd have someone meeting with the board every time, the board meets and saying to the board, hey, do you really want to do this? God, that's an awful lot of money. Do you realize this incentive plan would pay this person $3 million even in bad performance? Did you consider that fact? That sort of thing. I think that would help the board to push back and to say to the CEO, you know, Bill, this really is sort of ridiculous and we can't go along with this. That's wonderful. That's what we need to do.
Now that you are no longer consulting to corporations, do you have a different sense of American business or American economics or, you know, what fairness is in the workplace?
Yeah, I think so, because I've been forced to now to look at this sort of stuff. You know, I see this huge yawning gap between the pay of workers. Workers' pay is going nowhere. In fact, it's gone down about 13% in after-tax inflation-discounted terms in the last 20 years or so. I see this yawning gap. And if the gap was engendered by tremendous performance and tremendous risk on the part of the CEO, that would be one thing. I mean, if it were like Lee Iacocca, in Lee Iacocca's life is sort of like a two-act opera, at least from a compensation standpoint. In Act One, our hero, comes in to save Chrysler, and he takes a dollar a year, and he takes a huge set of stock options, and he says, "Look, if the company goes belly up, I'll make a dollar a year, and that's all I deserve. And if we turn it around and we do beautifully, I'll make millions, and that's what I deserve." And he made about $44 million of stock option profits, and everybody thought he was a great hero. They wanted to run him for president because he took risk. He was paid based on his performance. The new Lee Iacocca in Act Two is turning Chrysler around, or trying to turn Chrysler around a second time. But in this second act of the opera, where most of the opera goers have left the auditorium by this point, because this part is not exactly so thrilling, our hero is working for like $1 million a year salary and huge bonuses and everything else, and he's not taking much risk at all. Well, that part I find just terribly offensive, because if we're going to have these gaps and they're not related to performance, then there's no rationale for them. I think workers themselves, I mean, when I talked about the $1,000 maybe costing $30,000, the part I can't measure is how workers feel about it, how people say, you know, I'm not going to try hard anymore around this place, because all they do is they lay us off, they cut our pay, they freeze our pay, and then they end up giving the top executives lots of money.
Well, Griff Crystal, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
My pleasure.
Grave Crystal spoke with Terry Gross earlier this week. He's the author of In Search of Excess, The Overcompensation of American Executives. I'm Marty Moscowane, and this is Fresh Air.